This is Steve Goodrich, known on the trail as Bird Shooter, and this is N2 Backpacking, a podcast for both hikers and backpackers. Hello, backpackers. Bird Shooter here. And tonight, we revisit some of the hiking news events of the previous year. As we did last year, these were some of the heavily discussed stories of 2017. We will not cover them all, and we'll certainly miss many to keep this to an hour. And you can debate if all of these topics are newsworthy, but we hope you enjoy the show. I'm again joined by the Camel with a guest appearance from Pixie tonight. Apologies to international listeners. I follow a lot of U.S. blogs and forums, and this show definitely reflects that. But if you like the N2 Backpacking podcast and want to support the show, we just went live on Patreon this week. Make a donation and gain access to exclusive trip reports, photos, videos, and bonus shows that are not available anywhere else. Or get some free stuff, N2 Backpacking stickers, t-shirts, digital and paperback hiking books. That's patreon.com/N2Backpacking, patreon.com. Or you can click to the podcast tab at our website for more info. That said, we appreciate your interest, and here is episode 49.
All right, this is Bird Shooter, and tonight on the show we have a veteran of the series, the Camel. Welcome back, Camel.
Thank you.
And we also have Pixie, her first appearance on the show.
Yes.
You sound a little timid there.
I do.
Well, it's good to have you here. We're just into the new year, 2018, and tonight we're going to talk about some of the big news events of 2017. And I have a series of questions that I'm going to ask you. Curious to get your opinion. I will say, first off, though, that we're not going to cover all the big news topics of the year. There are way too many for us to cover. And also want to point out that, as last year, most of the news topics tend to be U.S.-based, because that is those are the forums, those are the backpacking magazines that I follow. So that said, let's start at the beginning of the year with January. We all need New Year's resolutions, me included. And I was going to start with a guy named Jay Capers, who was looking for a goal last year as we started the year. And he found a website called 52 Hike Challenge, 52hikechallenge.com, and decided that he was going to hike a hike every week for 52 weeks. And I guess the movement is encouraging you to get out, enjoy the outdoors, and get in shape. So we're going to try to start the show off in the new year right by doing something we all need: get more exercise and get more time on the trail. Anyway, sounds a little bit like 50 for 50 there, Camel. Any comments to that?
It does.
You were a participant in that. And actually, this went down, his article was in the Winston-Salem Journal, Old Stomping Grounds, Wake Forest University. They also have a Facebook page if you want to get inspired. What do you think the parameters should be for a hike? I guess that's the first question.
Distance.
Does it need to be on an officially marked trail?
Oh, I don't think so. I don't see why you can't bushwhack.
So you would say that as long as you're out hiking, bushwhacking should count. I got you. The way that we define them for 50 for 50 was a officially marked trail, right? But I guess at the end of the day, the point is to get out.
Boss, see, he needs to get out more. You see that body?
There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about that. I guess, so, Camel, I got to ask you, is there any chance that you will be partaking in the 52 hikes and 52 weeks challenge this year?
Probably not. I'll do one a month, though.
Well, you already got your New Year's hike in. So if you could knock one out this week, you're already off and running. And Pixie, what are the chances that you're going to do 52 hikes this year?
Not very good.
It's
However, you're not either.
Oh, okay.
Unless you just do them close to home.
That's interesting insight.
I'm happy for you to hike every week. Because since we have trails right down the street, you are more than welcome to go to those every weekend.
That's a good point, because to get your 52 hikes in 52 weeks, you don't necessarily have to go far.
Well, you don't necessarily have to not repeat. You can do the same one 52 times.
That's true.
Well, now, is that permitted, though? That seems like it would be a violation of the 52 hikes in 52 weeks.
I think it's good.
And for the listeners, if you haven't figured out, Pixie might be my wife and might have an issue somewhat with the frequency of hiking that I do. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we're going to move on. So, Pixie, you're a big trail runner. I wanted you here for this one because something interesting happened earlier in the year of 2017 in Jackson County. Camel, you're not far from your homestead there. Are you familiar with a place called Pinnacle Park?
I've heard of it, I think.
Well, they apparently have primitive camping. I looked at some photos on the internet. It looks like a very worthy trip. Like, great scenery from the
Jackson's ridges. Yeah, Jackson's up in the mountains.
Yeah, it looks super pretty, actually. But the Citizen Times, which I believe is Asheville. Is that Asheville's paper?
Might be.
They reported that someone nailed at least 60 spikes on the trail. They were 4 inches long, so pretty lengthy spikes. And they were hammered into roots and logs. They were all put in an angle. Obviously, the intent was to try to impale someone. There was a race called the Black Rock Summit Race that was coming up, and this happened right before the race. So they had to close the trail. I guess someone was out running before the race began and actually did impale themselves. So the question is, obviously a troubled person. I mean, what do you think? You think they have issues with runners on the trail?
That or the race?
Maybe. Or you think they, it doesn't matter if you're a runner or a hiker. They got a problem with both.
I doubt if there was any thought given to the consequences for whether they were getting one or the other. It sounds like whoever it was had some sort of beef with the run.
Yeah, that could be.
Or someone doing the run.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like a really, really pretty trail, but it's not the first time there's been booby traps in the wilderness.
But that's just, I mean, do you know how long that would take and not be seen?
Oh, to put those in?
Yeah. I mean, 60 spikes when you're hammering them in. It's not like you're throwing them on the ground if you're hammering them into the roots and that. That would take forever.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I mean, do you ever worry about booby traps when you hike?
Not really.
I can't say that I do either.
I'm looking for snakes more than spikes.
Yeah, well, supposedly, though, some of the legal growers will protect their fields with booby traps. Although,
well, yeah, but I mean, you're not going to, no one in their right mind is going to grow stuff next to a trail thing.
Exactly.
Well, that's fair to say.
And wouldn't you be like drawing attention to yourself putting spikes on a trail?
I would think. Jackson County strikes me more as a hidden still deploy a wildlife camera kind of place than would you agree?
Yeah.
Not a spikes in the
no.
rocks and roots.
No, that was someone I had to get who had, for whatever reason, a beef with someone or some race.
Any suggestions to those hikers that may wish to avoid booby traps on a hike?
Use poles.
Yeah, well,
I do poles.
I would think that you would need to know your area, read up in hiking and backpacking forums, check state and federal websites for warnings updates.
I imagine they would post something on the trailhead, on the information board or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to report that the race went on without a hitch. They did sweep the trail. They removed all the spikes. The race did go on. Unfortunately, the perpetrator was never caught, and the motive was never known.
And that was last year?
It happened in the early part of 2017, yeah. Huh. But what did happen in the state of North Carolina, where you live there, Camel, the General Assembly in April, there was a bill that was basically put in place that made it a misdemeanor to basically set traps on public land. So, anyway... If something did come out of that that's good, now there's a official law that, you know, at least defines some kind of punishment for that. So, moving on to a happier note. In the spring, the grizzly bear was removed from the endangered species list. Did you know that?
In the lower 48 or Alaska?
Well, that's a great question. This happened in the Yellowstone area. Let me ask you first. Have you ever seen... You've seen a bear in the woods.
Not a grizzly.
Never a grizzly. Have you seen a grizzly in the woods?
I saw a grizzly in Yellowstone, actually.
Oh, that is exactly the topic we were discussing.
He walked straight out of the woods and sat in the middle of the road, right in front of us. We had to stop, scratched himself for a couple of minutes, and got up and walked off again.
Was the one that we saw in Virginia?
It had to be a black bear. But you had a black bear scare the dickens out of you in Washington State, right?
Yeah.
And had you run all the way back to the... Wait, let me get this right. You ran as soon as you saw the bear.
Yeah. Well, he didn't see me, so...
That's good, because the worst thing you can do is
run.
Flight. That attracts them.
But that was a black bear, I believe.
It was.
But your heart was definitely racing when I saw you.
Yes, well...
And I believe you were carrying our son in your belly at the time, so more reason to be fearful.
I was ready to get out of there.
Yes, I was reading the paper on the front porch of the cabin at the time, not exercising as she was. Anyway, and any suggestions for the listeners if they were to hike in bear country?
Hairspray and bear bells.
Yes, those are good ideas. Put food in bear cans, cook away from your campsite. Store clothes that you cook in away from camp.
Yes.
There would be some tips. I had a grizzly, Roger. You've heard this story, I think. You've heard this too, Pixie, right?
I don't know. You better tell the story.
The grizzly that trailed us for hours in Denali National Park.
Oh, yes.
So I guess the question is it good they're off their endangered species list?
I think it's good that all of them.
It is, yeah.
I would agree. But are you fearful of grizzlies in the backcountry?
No.
Nah.
You guys are crazy. You're crazy to not be fearful.
I've never been scared.
I'm not scared of them. I have a healthy respect for them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a better way to put it. So a quiz for the two of you. Was the grizzly bear already off the endangered species list in the greater Yellowstone area?
Was it already?
Not in the park, but in the greater Yellowstone area. Was the grizzly already off the endangered species list?
Probably not.
It actually was.
Yeah.
So I guess it's no huge surprise that they came off in the park. Apparently, the grizzly bear increased from 271 to about 580 bears between 75 and 2005. So that's, they got removed around 2007. And the park is obviously done well to help them rebound as well. But you would think the greater area would be second to go off the list, and the park itself would be first.
Yeah.
But anyway, so a little news for you there. Another quiz question for you. Can plants be on the endangered species list?
Yeah.
Pixie?
Yeah, I guess other species.
They can. Ding, ding. Correctamundo. Moving on to another story that was in Backpacker Magazine this year. It was titled, Meet the Hardest Partiers on the Appalachian Trail.
That would have been us last night.
Yeah, the camel's hurting a little bit. We had a celebration last night that has cost him most of his day today.
Yes.
But you're here.
I am.
And you have abstained all day long, and you've recovered.
I wouldn't say recovered. Recovering.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Anyway, this article was written about Trail Days specifically. And how the annual event has turned into a mega event. Lots of people, lots of party, and lots of vendors that are there selling goods. And, you know, and obviously the townspeople enjoy having people come in because it's good for the community. But you've been to Trail Days. It's been many years.
Yes, I have.
You have any comments on Trail Days? What was your first, your takeaway from your first experience at Trail Days?
It was fun.
I'm trying to think what year that was. That was 90. It might have been as long ago as 98.
Wow.
Yes. It might have been 97 even.
I've been to probably three or four. I haven't been in any recently. But Trail Days has exploded in popularity over the years. Camel, you've done a lot of hiking. You like to have a good time. How have you missed this fun event, Trail Days?
I have no idea.
Well, I promise you that we're going to go in 2019 because I have a major milestone to celebrate that year.
What? How many years?
It's a bit of an anniversary for my thru-hike, so we will be going. And Camel, of course, you're invited.
Oh, well, thank you.
Absolutely.
How many years?
Do I have to say?
No. 30 years?
Do I need to give up my age here? Like, yeah, it's 25.
Wow, I know it was... Because I knew it was in the 90s you did it.
Well, you guys may not know. They have a parade every year. And the parade, they put you by your class, right? So that'd be kind of fun to hike with my through hiking class of that year.
Yeah.
But anyway, the intent of the festival is to promote the trail. Obviously, it benefits the local community. They sell a lot of food and gear and those sort of things. And it's also kind of a reunion of sorts for past, future through hikers and for really anybody that loves the trail. So it's a chance to learn more about the trail too. I guess the question is, if you were a local in this town, which is in Damascus, Virginia, located in western Virginia, and your town is less than 1,000 people, how would you feel about 20,000 people showing up?
Like I say, it's a good revenue earner. And if it's just, what is it, for a week or something?
Usually, Thursday through maybe Sunday. It's kind of basically when it goes.
Well, if you don't like it, you can always leave for that for a couple of days.
Well, that's true. That's true. That really, the point of the article was that the festival has gotten so big and that, there's sort of a tendency for groups to congregate and throw kind of parties. And there's one group specifically they called out. It was a group called Riff Raff. And I guess it's almost like a kind of trail fraternity. They have a shirt. You get shirted in. You got a cowboy hat with a hiking stick cross on it.
Okay.
And the article said that the group was described as like a outlaw hiker gang.
Oh, good boy.
More like the Hell's Angels than the Sierra Club. But first, let me ask you, because one of the things that the group does is they provide free food and free beer and a festive atmosphere to thru-hikers and, maybe potentially other folks. So if you were a tired, grubby, hungry thru-hiker and you walked into camp and they offered you free food and drink and potentially a shirt, you think you could turn them down?
Probably not.
I don't think I could. Pixie?
Yeah, no, I think.
I'm guessing that Pixie would be well welcomed there.
Why would, I mean, how could you call them like gang. Hell's Angels? Yeah. I mean, are they violent? It doesn't sound like they're violent.
They're not. And actually, the sheriff was quoted as saying he's never had any trouble with them.
Yeah, so how can you possibly, put them in the same bracket as Hell's Angels?
Well, honestly, I think the article was essentially really trying to drive home the point that both Trail Days and the trail in general have gotten so popular that
when you hiked, what was to say, 500 people did the trail. Now there's like thousands that do the trail.
I mean, the number is over 10 to probably 20 times when I hike.
So it's obvious it's going to grow.
Well, I think what the article was really trying to drive home was that a lot of people go to the wilderness to seek solitude.
Yeah.
And there are those that enjoy going out, not just to Trail Days, but actually to maybe on the campsite or a trail shelter and having a sort of festival situation, and it's not well received by all, right?
But it's just one weekend of the year.
And if it's bringing
revenue to the town and they're not committing crimes or causing
all power to them.
A whole lot of problems.
If they had a vote, I think there'd be more people wanting it there than not.
Well, let me ask this question. You think the number of hikers on the AT has gotten too large for its own good?
Yeah, probably. It's too popular.
And I guess the other question is it possible to have fun on the AT and not piss other people off?
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's what needs to be managed. That and also, it's generally a small percentage of hikers that upset the masses, right?
You always get that element. It doesn't matter what it is. It just happens. You always get idiots.
Well, I think it's almost kind of like Burning Man. If you're having fun, you're doing it in your own way, you're doing it in your own place, and you're not disturbing others, and you don't disobey the rules.
Yeah.
Although I haven't been to Trail Days for many years, and I can't speak to the current environment there. Although, 2019.
You will be able to update this podcast.
On a more interesting note, have you ever heard of a guy by the name of Forrest Fenn? He's an 86-year-old antique dealer.
No.
And he, a number of years ago, hid in the mountains of somewhere in the Rockies a $2 million treasure. Have you heard of this?
Oh, yes.
So the and I guess, actually, to be very specific, he hid it in the year 2010. So we're about 7 years into this, right? And there's been like 50,000 people that have tried to find this treasure. Yeah. So the reason that this is in the news this year is because a man named Paris Wallace, he was actually a pastor, a 52-year-old guy, and he was, I'm not sure if he was from New Mexico, but he was from somewhere in the Rocky Mountains. He went missing in June looking for Forrest Fenn's treasure. He was specifically looking for it in New Mexico, and he was later found deceased. So I guess the question is, you guys have heard about the hidden treasure, right?
Yeah.
If you lived in the area and were within a day's drive, would you be tempted to look for it?
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah, why not?
That would be my my 52 hikes.
That would be, because I'd do them all in the same.
But yeah, I've heard of that. There was actually a documentary on it.
Well, supposedly he wrote a poem, right? Yeah. And feel free to speak to this, but he wrote a poem with a bunch of clues.
Yeah.
But please continue.
So a lot of people, and he actually tells you if you've cracked part of it, okay. I think. So a lot of it's been cracked, but they just can't find the final bits.
Are we for certain that this guy really hid the treasure?
It's true. He did. Yeah. They went, who did it? There's that TV program. What's his name? Josh someone. He goes, Unexplained Mysteries or something. Josh someone. He did it. He went up and he actually went up and knocked on his door. And the guy's real nice. Let him in and that. And his house has just got all these, you know, it's just loaded with antiques and gems, you name it. And, you know, he was real nice. And he was there with a couple of other people who were doing the trail and that, you know, trying to find it. And that, the guy was really obliging in that. It was a good thing. It was worth watching.
Well, and really what the article that I read was about was the fact that now we've had two people that have died trying to find this treasure. There was another gentleman by the name of Randy Beaulieu, if I pronounce that correctly. He was from Colorado. I think he was about 54. And he disappeared in January of 2016, so the previous year. And he was later found, his remains were later found in July. But there's concern, the New Mexico police actually want to put an end to the hunt, so they're trying to shut it down. But the antique dealer, Forrest Fenn, his real intent is to get people outside. So the whole reason he did this treasure was he wanted people to get outside, get off their butt, experience the great outdoors, see the sights, get exercise, right, get in shape. But now people are dying. So what do you do?
Well, how many people die on the trail in different places? It's just, they've just singled this out, you know. How many people actually die in New Mexico hiking?
That's fair. So they actually, the article interviewed Paris's wife, who was the second person to die. What do you think she said? Do you think she said the hunt should go on, or you think she
probably
said?
Yeah, I guess so. How old is this guy?
That's a great question. So basically, Forrest Fenn, when all this went down, he went publicly and announced that he's 87.
Does anyone else know where the treasure is?
Well, he hid the treasure when he was 80. And he basically said that you don't need to overexert yourself, overextend yourself. I was 80 when I hid the treasure. Yeah. I'm 87 now, and I could probably go back and get it if I wanted to.
But, I mean, he's probably close to the end. Does anyone else know where it is?
No.
No, they don't.
No, they don't.
So, I mean, it could be at the bottom of a parking lot. It's those cryptic clues, it's like probably under a boulder or something.
But Paris,
it couldn't be too hard, because if he was...
Well, that's
80,
it. That's
he came under a huge boulder.
Half these, you know, these people are in the 50s. They were probably out of shape and died of a heart attack or something.
Or they got lost. And
I think this last guy actually might have drowned. Yeah. He got into a river, and which is a common way. Like, I think falling and drowning are two of the most common ways. But one of the things that surprised me was his wife actually said that she supported that the hunt would go on, which kind of surprised me, actually.
Yeah.
But... no word at press time here if the police are going to end up shutting this down.
Well, how can you?
Yeah. Anyway, interesting news event for the year.
Yeah.
Shifting gears, this went down this summer. And we're all dog lovers. You were rubbing my dog's belly for hours tonight because he curled right up next to you and wouldn't stop bugging you for it. So basically, this happened near Breckenridge, Colorado. A place that you've been there, Pixie.
I have.
And I believe you like.
I like Colorado.
I don't know if you guys have heard a mountain called Mount Bross. Or I'm not.
No.
Maybe it's Bross. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. It's a 14er, which means...
It's 14,000 feet plus.
Yeah, 14,000 feet. And a lot of people obviously hike the 14ers. It's a big thing. Kind of like doing 52 hikes in 52 weeks.
Yeah.
Or 50 hikes in 50 states. But anyway, a 14-year-old dog, Chloe, was found after wandering for 6 weeks and had been trapped near the summit. The dog lost. It was a 90-pound dog. They found it. It weighed 26 pounds.
Aww.
Can't believe it survived.
Multiple hikers heard the dog crying when they were on top of the 14er and could not find it. But I guess apparently there's a 14er.com website where a lot of the people that do the 14ers communicate, and there was a lot of information on there that people were hearing this dog. And apparently the dog ran off from their home, from her home, with another younger dog. The other dog came back, but she didn't. So this dog was missing for 6 weeks. 6 weeks near the summit of this mountain, which you got to keep in mind, you're not at 8,000 feet.
Nah,
I mean,
cold.
So you're super high in elevation. Mm-hmm. So the fact that this dog survived is amazing. I guess the question is, apparently it was stuck. So it was stuck in some rocks. I don't know if it was stuck for the whole 6 weeks there, but it was definitely stuck. Can you believe the dog lived, first of all?
No.
Not now, with the elements. God, it gets cold up there.
Now, you've seen our dog, which has a fair amount of fat resources. Do you think it would be able to survive 6 weeks in the wilderness?
Possibly. He's got quite enough storage.
Yeah.
If any dog could, it would probably be our dog.
Yes.
That would be Boondog, by the way.
He can probably do eight.
But the thing that struck me was how did this dog get water?
The snow.
I mean, I guess you could potentially have snow. That's a good point. There was probably snow in there. What I didn't tell you was apparently there was a couple that was on top of the mountain. They heard the dog crying for help. I don't know if they were able to save it that day, but they went back and found the dog later, put their own lives at risk, because I think it was in kind of like a crevice, and it wasn't like you could just go and very easily get the dog out. Did get the dog out, got it back to the owner. How do you reward someone that does that for you?
I don't know, it's tough.
Ugh.
Yeah, have a dog.
Unbelievable. Anyway, so that's a happy note there. We're going to move on to maybe a little more controversial note, and this is politics.
Oh.
My favorite thing to talk about.
Yeah, Pixie loves politics. Mm-hmm. So a lot of interesting things actually happened this year. And whether you love or hate politics, the reality is that they impact our state and federal lands. I mean, they do. That's just the bottom line. Whether you choose to ignore them, it's the reality, right? And what federal land do you think is under attack currently with the president's current proposed budget cuts?
National parks.
Close. But this is a sort of a step before a national park. And Campbell, we might have talked about this on our last podcast, actually. If you can play back the tapes.
So it's not state parks, no?
It's actually the national monuments. And to give you some examples, you and I talked about this, I think, in the last podcast. Aztec ruins, the Devil's Tower, which you know. The White Sands National Monument, which is super cool.
I've been there, yeah.
It's awesome. Mount St. Helens, which you would know from the volcano. And then there's a lot of, like, homesteads, forts, historical buildings. I think in Atlanta we've got some Civil War, or, well, probably Civil War and Civil Rights sites, right? Yes. But generally what happens is they're national monuments, and eventually they get the national park status. Have you been to any lately?
No.
Well, this summer, did we go to any when we were out in the Dakotas? No, I think we were all in federal national parks, right?
Yeah. Well, wouldn't Rushmore be a national monument?
I think it's a national park, I'm pretty sure.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah. But here's a question for you. How do you think, do you guys know how they get their money to keep them running?
No.
Just federally funded?
Well, they are, but it's actually interesting. The Land and Water Conservation Fund, which was created in 1964, what they do is they direct royalties paid by the energy companies that are drilling offshore. They take some of the proceeds from the, you know, off the continental shelf drilling to fund the parks and the kind of recreational sites and those things. And it's equaled as much as like $900 million in the past. Any idea of where, what the plans are budget-wise, cuts?
I have no idea.
Is this just money that for upkeep?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. The plan is basically they're going to take some of those funds and divert them into a kind of day-to-day government fund so they can get the budget reduced. So it's obviously a, you know, it's you know, it could put a lot of the national monuments in jeopardy.
Well, I'll just pay to go and see them.
That you're right on the right track of where we're headed with this, right? So, but before we go there, you want to take a guess on who's on the president's side on this whole issue?
I don't know. National parks. They'd probably get more money.
Well, there's actually Utah Representative Rob Bishop, and last year, and I think we talked about this in the last podcast, Camel, when we got together about a year ago, but he was. After the Bear Ears and the Grand Staircase National Monument, and on December, he actually was able to get President Trump to reduce some of the acreage that those national monuments had. And now he's got his sights set on basically not letting the president dictate a national monument. He's trying to make it so that a president can only allow a national monument with like 640 acres. Before, like, a president could dictate an area with 85,000 acres.
Because 640 acres is a square mile, right?
Yeah, well, apparently it's the bill he's proposing is going to really reduce, when they create a national monument, how much land can be there. So a question for you guys. You think most neighboring cities and communities support or reject these national monuments?
Probably support them, like, because, I mean, people come to see them, so that means that they're going to stop and eat, get gas, do stuff, generates income.
Pixie?
Yeah, I think that it would support the monuments.
Well, you guys are right. I mean, there's actually two answers to this. So if you're in a community that depends on tourism, mm-hmm. you know, it's good for you, right? But if you're in an industry that needs the land for cattle or for mining or for, you know, essentially business purposes, it doesn't necessarily help you. And another complaint that is being made is that a lot of times the state and the communities don't have enough say in what happens when these areas are created.
Mm-hmm.
So hard to say where it's going to go.
I would hand a lot of stuff over to the state.
Well, and that's what the states are arguing is, hey, we want more control over what's happening with some of these lands, right?
It's like you got someone in Washington dictating what's happening in Wyoming or Minnesota or somewhere that has no clue.
That's exactly the rub. And that's really what a lot of this is about. But, I mean, it's obviously a very complex issue.
Well, that's why you have state laws, because what applies in Texas might not necessarily apply in Massachusetts or something. you know, state laws, you know.
But you said something earlier, Camel, that it was another big news event for this year, and that is that the National Park Service is going to double entrance fees to parks in some cases. So I guess the question is, let me give you specifics. So if you go peak season, some parks are going to be $70 to enter.
Wow.
If you don't go peak season, it could be as low as 30. And keep in mind, you can get a pass that will give you access to all parks for 80. But I guess the question is, you know, there's a fair number of people that, you know, just can't afford that to get into a park. Is that fair to, you know, the lower income folks that probably depend on the parks more than anyone, right?
Well, how did they manage to get a car and drive up there, didn't they?
Well, yeah, I don't disagree with that, but I mean, that's a ton of money to go into a park.
Is that person or per car?
I'm not sure. Oh, it's commercial vehicle. Entrance fee for a private non-commercial vehicle.
Is $70.
Yes.
That is more than I would have thought.
It's only during peak season, though. Keep that in mind. But,
well, if we're going to have to cut the funding, then...
Well, that's a question. I mean, a lot of the parks have been under attack for budget cuts. I mean, they got to fund it, right? How do they fund their parks?
Yeah, the thing is, if you put it expensive, you're going to scare people away. So you're better off having it reasonably priced and attracting more people.
So, Campbell, you're a great person to ask this question, though, because you're from the UK. Where does the money come from in the UK?
National Trust.
Is it through taxes?
I think so, yeah.
That's where it comes from?
I think so. Then you've got, a lot of them, but then you've got stately homes and stuff like that, which is part of the National Trust, but you pay to go in and see them.
You know, and you and I hike in the Smokies a lot. Pixie, you've been in the Smokies as well. One of the things that can happen in the Smokies, when that park was created, 441, which runs right through the middle, because it runs through the middle and it connects Cherokee and Gatlinburg, Cherokee, North Carolina, yeah. Gatlinburg, Tennessee, they're not allowed to charge entrance fees because they felt like it was a burden on the locals who were just trying to get from one side to the other. So the Smokies are in a unique situation because they can't raise any money on entrance fees. So they get squeezed even harder, right?
So why don't they just give local citizens a pass?
Well, that's a good question, and that's a fair question. I don't know the answer to that, but...
So, I mean, that's the solution. You just, you know, if you're within a 50-mile radius or whatever, you can apply for a free pass.
You know, I'm sure there's some complexities there that we're not aware of, because I no doubt that would make sense. But anyway, so we can leave politics now if you would like.
Yes, that, I would like.
That makes the Pixie happy. All right, so on a happier note, in the Grand Canyon, two teens were rescued, and this happened in the summer, but they were two 18-year-old kids from Florida, mm-hmm. and they were lost for 5 days. I shouldn't say they were lost. Yeah, well, I guess they were lost.
Wow.
They were lost for 5 days in the Grand Canyon, and you've been in the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
Camel, have you been in the Grand Canyon?
Yeah.
Pixie, any comments about the Grand Canyon there?
How do you get lost? Like, you're in a canyon, you can see out.
I don't know. We were on... I mean, I think it'd be easy to get lost there.
See, I've never been down in the canyon.
Oh.
Like, we went part of the way, remember?
Yeah, we went half. I've been all the way down in
there. See, I've never been all the way down.
But there's a lot of side trails. Mm. And I think the bigger concern is water. If you get away from where there's water, you can die.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, these two boys were rescued. And I mean, people go missing and die in the Grand Canyon all the time, so I guess there's not anything super unique about this. But in this case, I brought it up because they did a lot of things right. But before I tell you what they did right, I will tell you that the park rangers gave them some grief for relying too much on a cell phone.
Is that why they got lost?
No, but I think they felt that the cell phone could get them out of trouble. So let me ask the question first. When you hike, do you always have a cell phone there, Pixie?
I think so. I mean, I probably have one with me.
Cam?
Yeah, I've usually got one with me.
I do too.
Take pictures.
For the most part in the East Coast, they're probably going to work. Not always. It depends on your carrier, too, actually. The carriers make a big difference on what works, at least today. I'm sure it'll change.
Usually works, apart from when you drop down into the valley where, you know. Because if you drop into the Grand Canyon, how are you going to get reception?
Well, that's a great point because, yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, so what other options do you have? We should talk about that if you know. What else can you do if chances are your cell phone's not going to work for communication or for safety?
Well, bring a map and a compass.
I agree. Anything else there?
Walkie-talkies.
I put walkies on the list. Actually, the walkies have saved our butts a few times. We don't carry them as much as we used to because we're always carrying cell phones. But back when the cell phones didn't work, those walkies saved us a lot. Yeah.
Plus, we're fat and useless and don't go as far as we used to.
You know, the other technology that exists today, which is big, is the personal locator beacon, right, where you can flip them. So that's big. Signal mirror, always helpful to have. Whistle, right? And the kids did have a whistle on them, and they did use it. What they did do right is they did try to retrace their footsteps. They did find water, and once they found it, they stayed there. When they knew they were lost and they weren't really sure where they were, they stayed near the water, which probably saved their life. They did ration their food. They made a ground sign for a helicopter. Helicopters did come, did not rescue them, but the helicopters did actually go over, and they had a, you know, SOS for them. And they apparently used the whistle, too. So they did a lot right, but they were getting some grief for thinking that the cell phones could save them.
Yeah. People rely too much on technology.
But, you know, the Grand Canyon is a place of no mercy. I mean, that is not a place to be taken lightly. But anyway, fortunately, that's a happy ending.
That's one of my biggest fears.
Getting lost?
Yep.
Can we talk
about
that?
I would fear that way more than a bear any day.
Your timing is perfect, Pixie, because we're going to talk about Mount Washington right now. Yeah. Do you want to talk about Mount Washington when you got fearful in the fog and the giant VW-sized boulders? And
Yeah. Well, that's just because I'm short. My legs don't reach the ground.
But I think you were a little concerned I got out of sight a couple of times.
Yeah, I will not hike by myself, and if I can't see somebody else, then, yeah, I freak out.
But you're not afraid to run alone, and you run alone all the time.
Not on a trail. I'm scared of getting it lost.
You don't think you could find your way?
Nope, not out of a paper bag. I am terrified. That would be awful.
So we're shifting, and Camel, you've been to New Hampshire, and we've hiked in New Hampshire on the Appalachian Trail, but have you been to Mount Washington before?
No.
So, they are looking at putting a hotel on top of Mount Washington. And you remember, well, you remember being on top?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And there's a restaurant, there's a museum, there's a weather station, right? So there's already kind of a lot of stuff up there. And there's been a hotel there before. What's your opinion? You think does it matter if you slap a hotel up there?
I wouldn't.
Not if you have all these other commercial things.
You don't think it's a problem?
No.
So, how'd you get up? So, you have to hike up to the hotel?
You can take a train already to the top of the summit, and you can drive up there already.
Oh, you can?
Yes.
I didn't realize that.
So, and there's been a hotel there before. It was 1908, I guess. It's been years, but there was one at one time. It burned down. So, it's not like there hasn't been a hotel there.
They have good insulation. What was it? Minus 91 up there? Couple of weeks ago, something like that.
Well, there were years there for Mount Washington having the strongest wind on the planet.
Yes.
So it's a pretty brutal environment.
Might get up there thinking you're staying a night, and you might be up there for a week.
Well, so the proponents argue that it will actually free up some space in the huts. And you, Pixie, you and I stayed in a hut, right? Or did we?
I can't remember.
Can't remember either if I was with you. I've stayed in huts before. You and I have hiked through there and stayed in shelters at least. They get full. I mean, a lot of people love the whites. They go there. What they're trying to argue is, hey, look, this is going to help relieve some pressure on the shelters and the huts, but is it also going to encourage more people to hit the area and make it more crowded?
Oh, I'm sure it will.
Well, people that don't hike or can't hike.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have an opinion on that. I will say that that area is insanely beautiful. And,
well, the people who generally stay in the huts and shelters aren't going to stay in that hotel.
It's not the same.
So you're still going to have the same amount of people in the huts and that. You're just going to be drawing in a different kind of clientele for the hotel.
Well, they may not be able to afford it either. That could be the bigger issue.
Well, that's what I'm saying, yeah. It's like, you know.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. We'll see. My gut is that that hotel doesn't get built, but we'll find out over time.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to move on to a what I think is pretty exciting. A 9-year-old just finished hiking the Triple Crown. Do you guys know what the Triple Crown is?
Yep.
Let's hear it, Camel.
AT, PCP, or T.
PCP.
PCP, and the Continental Divide.
That's right. The Appalachian Trail, the Pacific Crest Trail, and the Continental Divide Trail. You're looking at about 10,000 miles total. A 9-year-old finished doing the Continental Divide Trail on September 18th. He's the youngest person known to have ever completed the Triple Crown. He started the Appalachian Trail at age 5 in 2012 with his stepfather and his mother. And they obviously hiked with him. He obviously did not hike solo. Can you imagine letting a 5-year-old hike the trails without their parents? No.
No.
Yes. Can you imagine a 9-year-old hiking 10,000 miles?
Yeah. Can he read and write?
I think, you know, I read an article, actually Backpacker Magazine had an article about him. It was really interesting. And, you know, they obviously worked on his schoolwork when he was on the trail. But the mother did get some criticism because, you know, there were those that felt that, you know, that they're kind of putting a lot of pressure on a kid that's really young and doesn't have a lot of say in the matter. But at the end of the day, I mean, what an accomplishment and what an experience for that guy, right?
Well, he probably didn't know any better anyway, so he just thought that was the way things were, probably.
Well, so I guess the question is, what do you do next? How do you top that? You've hiked the 3 major trails in the United States. You've hiked 10,000 miles. What do you do now? What's your encore?
I don't know.
Maybe I'll get into mountain climbing.
Oh, you think so?
I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Camino de Santiago.
Yeah, they're world trails, right?
That's an impressive feat. Hats off to Buddy Backpacker.
Yeah, I don't know why they would give the mom criticism.
You know, there's criticism for any topic.
That's true.
Yes.
But, I mean, hats off to Buddy Backpacker. I'd love to actually interview he and his family. I think that would be exciting. But respect.
Yeah, no, I think it's cool.
I mean, how many adults can claim that they've hiked those 3 trails? So now something a little closer to home. Pixie, you're a Girl Scout leader, or have been.
Yes, not now.
But you still work with the Girl Scouts. We have a daughter that's a Girl Scout.
Yes.
I'm a Boy Scout, currently an assistant scoutmaster, but have done some turns in Cub Scouts as a den leader and also a Cub Master for periods of time. So the big news this year is, do you know?
Allowing girls in the Boy Scouts.
Yeah. Do you have an opinion on that one? Your first reaction, good move or bad move?
No, I think it's good. Because I think Girl Scouts are different than Boy Scouts. And if girls want to do more of the serious camping and backpacking that they don't do in Girl Scouts, then why not?
So, well, that's a fair question, but I had a response to that. Camel, do you have an opinion before we kind of delve into the subject?
Seems to me like if it gets really popular for girls to be in Boy Scouts, then there will be no more Girl Scouts.
Do you know what the Girl Scouts had to say about this? Like, publicly, the...
No, I do not.
They were not happy about it.
Oh, I doubt if they would be.
Well, so in their defense, you know, they have their own program, and when the Boy Scouts start siphoning Girl Scouts from their program, it diminishes their program, right?
Yeah.
And they've had a program for a very long period of time, which has been successful. The other thing is, are you familiar with venturing? Venture scouting? Are you, Camel?
I've heard of it.
So venturing is a program for young men and women, ages 14 to 20, admittedly. But basically, boys and girls together can do backpacking, all kind of different activities. So one of the arguments I think the Girl Scouts had was, hey, look, there's already an opportunity for them to participate in a Boy Scout program, which is called Venturing.
Is it the same as Boy Scouts? I mean, do they do... See, the thing is with yes, Girl Scouts...
They do. They do hardcore, yeah. Backcountry.
Well, then I don't... Yeah, then I guess they could do that. But the Girl Scouts, it's not the same. I mean, they definitely don't do... At least the programs that I've, you know, been involved with. They're not nearly the backpacking, camping, hardcore... Like you guys do.
So here's another question for you. So the Boy Scouts they've had a lot of pressure on them to take, you know, originally it was essentially a Christian organization. They had a lot of pressure on them to take all religions, which they agreed to do. They had a lot of pressure on them to take gay leaders, right, and also gay scouts, which they agreed to do. And now they're getting pressure to take girls in their ranks, which they've agreed to do. The Boy Scout numbers have been decreasing. Any thoughts on why that's the case? Let me ask you that.
Sports.
You think it's sports?
Absolutely.
Do you guys know why that the Boy Scouts decided to take girls? Do you know what drove that?
Bulk up their numbers.
I don't think it was not that. It was actually a lot of families came to the Boy Scouts and said, "Hey, look, you know, we are stressed in our time. You know, we mom and dad are both working. We don't have time. We need to go to one event. We don't have time to spread our kids across multiple. We want to do things as a family, basically." And that's what drove that whole decision.
I didn't see that.
Yeah.
But by crikey, I just wanted to get away from my sister, not have her tagging along.
Well, I will say that the troops and the Cub Scout packs have the option to have a male-only or a male and female group. So... You're not forced to
take girls.
Yeah, take girls. You would just have to have a... You'd have to either form or join a co-ed organization. Yeah. I think it's a little unfair to the Girl Scouts, though. Because they already have their program. Mm-hmm. And they obviously weren't happy about it. But anyway, that was a big, big news event for the year. And last but not least, to end on a happy note, did you know that a... new record was set on the Appalachian Trail this year for age and finishing the Appalachian Trail.
I did not.
Young girl old.
And Pixie was looking over my shoulder, so she knows the answer. So I'm going to ask you, Camel, how old do you think the oldest thru-hiker to hike the Appalachian Trail currently is?
I don't know. I bet it's something ridiculous, like 90 or something.
And that's a fair guess. It's actually 82. Which I think I would have guessed older, like you.
Yeah, I've known some people that you would never know they're 90. You would think they're like in their 70s or something.
Yeah, agreed, man.
Look
it's all
Betty White.
Yeah, but she looked great. I totally agree. How long do you think it took this man? And by the way, to give him some credit, the guy's name was Dale, and his trail name was Graybeard. Can't imagine how he got that. Dale Graybeard Sanders, and I guess on October 26th, he officially became the record holder. 2,190 miles. 82-year-old guy just knocked that out. That's pretty impressive.
80-year-olds run marathons.
Well, that's a great point.
Yeah.
I mean, that's harder on your body.
Yeah, I would agree. I would totally agree, actually. That's a great point. I mean, here's a little inspiration for the new year. Right, like maybe I need more inspiration.
I was like, wait, who are you talking to?
Yeah,
than anybody at this table.
Yeah, we whine about going like 5 miles back because it's too much, and it's like some 80-year-olds just doing a couple of thousand.
Exactly. How long do you think it took him to hike the Appalachian Trail?
6 months.
9 months.
Ooh, it was actually 7, which. You know, I mean, it's a little longer than normal, but that, you know, geez.
It might have been taking a sweet time.
When I was through hiking, and granted, this was a number of years ago, I ran into a guy that was in his 80s. I think he was 80. He was right at 80. And in Killington, Vermont, he had made it all the way there from Springer Mountain. And what he told me at the time was his biggest problem, he couldn't keep his weight on. He was burning so many calories, he was skin and bones, to the point it actually scared him. And he was doing everything he could to try to fatten up. And I don't know if he made it, but I mean, the guy hiked from Georgia to Vermont in a day when the packs weighed a lot more, right? So
I guarantee he made it.
Yeah. I don't know. But anyway, kudos to Mr. Dale Sanders. That's a pretty impressive feat. Yes. I think that goes to show you, if you got a 9-year-old kid that just hiked 10,000 miles and an 82-year-old man that just hiked 2,200, that your new year, you can do this. Is that fair to say? So perhaps we will end on that. But let me just say one other thing about Mr. Dale Sanders. This guy in 2019 plans to paddle the entire Missouri River, almost 4,000 miles, from somewhere in Montana to the Gulf of Mexico. So a pretty amazing thing. He's already paddled the entire Mississippi River, which is around 2,300 miles.
I thought the Missouri went into the Mississippi somewhere.
It may, because it says Gulf of Mexico, so that's possible. Anyway, some inspiration. This is an 82-year-old guy.
Yeah,
I could more do the paddling, because let's face it, it's a river. So if you're going downstream, you don't necessarily have to paddle that much. You're going to get there anyway.
You're also not 82 years old there, bro.
And you can carry lots of stuff, as we know.
True. Well, that's a wrap, guys. Thank you for providing us some insight into these exciting news events of the year.
Welcome.
And hopefully I have given us all some inspiration for the year to
come. Oh, I'm inspired.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for being on the show.
Cool.
Sure.
Bedtime.
Thank you for listening to the Into Backpacking podcast. This is your host, Bird Shooter, wishing you the best for your travels on the trail. To subscribe to this show, visit iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or your favorite podcast app, and give us a thumbs up or a positive comment while you're there. You can also download shows directly from intobackpacking.com. Just click the podcast tab on the main menu. Music for this show was provided by Jerris under a Creative Commons license and is titled Hillbilly Anarchy. This show is a production of Into Backpacking and is copyrighted by Into Ventures, Inc. For more information on this podcast or to provide feedback or comments on this or future shows, please visit us at intobackpacking.com. That's the letter N, the number 2, backpacking.com.